you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget, and more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, and staff sponsors or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jennifer Lahl, who is on the front lines as far as the effort to let people understand the truth about stem cells. Now, a lot we hear about embryonic stem cells. Should we try to help people using embryonic stem cells? And of course, this, like so many issues, is a highly charged issue. And people say, well, but you're destroying human life. And then the other people say, but don't you want to help poor suffering people? Certainly if we could simply be able to develop a technique using embryonic stem cells to, you know, restore paralyzed limbs, Christopher Reeves, get him out of a wheelchair, get him out running again, a Superman. And what about Michael Fox with his Parkinson's disease? And look at all of these people. I mean, are you totally heartless? Don't you care about them? And of course, they put you immediately into a defensive position. But you must understand that this discussion, like so many other discussions, is to debate the wrong issues. It's sort of like what's going on in finances today. You know, should we be for or against the people or the executives of our major financial institutions getting money from the government, going off for a nice 4 or 5 day holiday there, golfing holiday at our expense in at Reno or Las Vegas? I mean, how do you really feel about the buying a new corporate jet for $50 million when a company is having to go to the government for money? And what they're doing is debating the wrong issue. The real issue is, of course, why aren't they demanding that the people who wrote the faulty loans that have brought down the whole world economic system take those loans back? They've got the money. They've got trillions of dollars salted away. Why aren't they being held responsible? And why aren't the people who wrote the guarantees on the bonds rated them to all AAA, why aren't they held responsible for fraud? So this is the same issue that Jennifer is going to be addressing today. She's going to be addressing the issue not necessarily of embryonic stem cells, should we or should we not using them, but the stem cell research is one of the most exciting things in medicine today, but the American people are not being told the truth. Would that be a fair appraisal, Jennifer?
I think that would be a fair appraisal. You know, we have sloppy journalism and a media that doesn't really like to do their research well enough to present what's at stake in these great debates. And we have a scientific community that, for the large part, rejects any kind of moral restrictions or limits on their research.
Jennifer, are you on a regular telephone? We're just a little scratchy there.
Yes, I'm on a regular phone.
All right, fine. Well, yeah. I think when we go to the break, I'll have you hang up and get you on it. But you go right ahead, and I'll tell you what to do. Go ahead.
Sure, and you raised the point that those who oppose our point of view want to tell us that we're against cures, when in fact that's not true. Men and women across the political and religious stripes can be all in favor of cures, but the debate has always been, how are we going to get those cures? And is there an ethical line or boundary that we don't want to cross? And that's where the rub has been. And so the journalists don't want to accurately report what's at stake. They want to brush us as people who don't care about Christopher Reeves or Michael J. Fox. They want to label us as anti-science, anti-technology, anti-progress, which is not the case. But we want to stand firm in saying that there will always be and should always be ethical limits placed on any area of research, and that's a good thing for society.
I agree with you, Tota. Well, I'm going to ask you just to go ahead and hang up, and we will call you right back in just a moment. I hope we get a better line, because I think what you have to say is so vitally important. Thanks very much. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Jennifer Law, who, of course, works with the whole issue of stem cell research, trying to educate people really about the amazing things that can be done with stem cells, but these are not embryonic stem cells. Jennifer, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, you sound so much better than you did. That, really, I think your information is important, so we want to get it down well. How did you get involved in this whole issue of stem cell research?
Well, I went back to graduate school and pursued a degree in bioethics, and at the time when I was in graduate school was right about the time when embryonic stem cells were first discovered. You know, we can thank Louise Brown, who was the first test tube baby, for sort of opening this door that allowed us to all of a sudden be able to make embryos in the lab. And, of course, once we were able to make human life in the laboratory, the scientists wanted to start, you know, dissecting it and learning more about it. So I was in graduate school at the height and the very beginning of the embryonic stem cell debate.
All right, fine. Well, now, what, as far as embryonic stem cells are concerned, have there been ever been any successful transplants, and have they actually been effective in helping people?
No. Since 1998, when we first discovered embryonic stem cells, they have produced not a one therapy or treatment that could help a patient. And only just now are they going to be going into the first time ever a human clinical trial to see if they're, for one, safe. But no, to date there has not been any benefit whatsoever for a sick patient. I remind people all the time, the reason we're having this big debate is because we want cures for sick people. We want treatments and therapies because sick people need help. And so far that is not the case. Unlike adult stem cells, which are not ethically problematic, which have no moral limits whatsoever, which have been for decades been used to treat patients.
And I think that's really what's so important is the fact that they have used these adult stem cells. They've had miraculous results and miraculous cures with those. But this is never mentioned. What they want to do is focus our attention on another issue. As with so many things, they play games with our minds, and we don't talk about the real issue, whether it's on finance, or whether it's on abortion, whether it's on homosexuality, whether it is on stem cells. And the old adage is focus their attention elsewhere. They're too dumb to understand. And this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jennifer Law. We're talking about the miracle of stem cells. Now, what sort of things can stem cells be used for that are beneficial?
Well, stem cells from umbilical cord blood after the baby's been born can be collected and have been used for a long time to treat lots of the blood kind of disorders, sickle cell anemia, thalassemia, Cooley's anemia, a lot of the leukemias, the blood cancers. That's been going on for quite some time. And adult stem cells, often the patient's own stem cells, can be used to treat multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, paralysis, damaged heart muscle after heart attacks. There's a lot of ongoing research in diabetes, type 1 diabetes. So it's just really exciting, and you're right, the news doesn't report that because it doesn't make controversy. And controversy, like, you know, helps them sell their papers. And if you can just turn on the news and hear, oh, everything is great and wonderful, people say, well, that's wonderful, and go about their busy day. But if we can stir up a fight and a debate and a controversy, then that keeps the media much happier.
Well, now, as far as the stem cells, the adult stem cells, and of course, I don't understand how they do it, but apparently they take them from fat or other tissues, and then they culture them, and they can actually get them to develop, you know, sometimes into neurological, into nerve tissue, other times into heart tissue, other times into, you know, into pancreatic tissue, such as the islands of Langerhans for diabetes. But basically, you know, what about this idea of reconstituting the spinal cord? Certainly when I was practicing medicine, went to medical school, went through my residency, it was an added that, you know, if you actually had spinal cord injury, and it was, was complete, it wasn't coming back again. Then these people were doomed to a life, certainly in a wheelchair. Have anybody actually gotten out of a wheelchair, or at least be able to improve some of their function through the miracle of the use of stem cells?
Yes, there are cases of people who have had improved function and improvement in sensation, feeling. There's a young girl, I'm not able to recall her name right away, that, you know, is able to now with braces walk. I don't want to oversell the treatment and the benefit yet, but the direction that the research and the progress is going is all very positive in, you know, measurable improvement in movement and sensation. So, you know, this is the beauty of the stem cell treatment, is the ability to go in and do the regenerative aspect and actually to repair the damaged area, whether it be a spinal cord, whether it be a heart or liver or pancreas, so that regenerative aspect that gets in and heals. And the beauty in the research that's using the patient's own stem cells is that there's not an issue of the rejection. So that's an added bonus, so you're not going to have to be fighting off rejecting getting a stem cell treatment from somebody else.
And I think that's really so important, and that's what's wrong. One of the major things wrong with the use of embryonic stem cells is that, of course, they come from somebody with a different DNA. And our body, your body, my body, is going to try to reject that. Now, they may be able to, sometime down the line, be able to, of course, type specific as they do with hearts. In other words, you might find only one person in 100,000 who would not tend to reject. But if you're going to use these things widely, you're not going to be able to do this very specific typing. So what about this whole idea of being able to regenerate heart, cardiac muscle? Some people will have a heart attack, extensive damage, and what certainly can be done for that?
Yeah, and that's the exciting thing when you just look at the human body anyway, and the awe and the mystery of how it's been designed, because our body is already designed to heal itself. That's why when we cut ourselves, burn ourselves, break a bone, you know, get a flu, you know, the body goes into action to repair it, because, you know, that's just part of our design. So the stem cells are sort of playing off that already inborn mechanism of repairing, getting to work, regenerating, making damaged tissue turn into healthy, good tissue. So it's a wonderful field of medicine. It's a wonderful field of scientific pursuit. And so nobody would disagree there. But again, the problem gets back to what does the general public understand and know about it, and how are they being informed, and how is the information being disseminated? It's in, you know, kind of a bait and switch. It's trickery. It's deceitful. And it plays on the fear of hyping up this urgency that we must do this, because this is where the cures are going to be found, is in these precious little embryos that are more magical.
And of course, it's not there. Basically, it's in the adult stem cells that have been used and used very effectively. And isn't it amazing, with the degree of control that they have with the media, they largely block out any mention of that. Now, it's very specific. They can actually you know, actually take these stem cells and insert them into the heart. Do they, what do? Do they put that into the little catheters?
And yes, it's like a little getting a blood transfusion, right, or you know, an IV infusion of an antibiotic. So it's you know, it's a relatively you know, minor procedure. And when I worked in pediatric nursing, you know, the kids with sickle cell disease would just come in on an outpatient basis and get an infusion, and so they didn't even have to be required to stay overnight in the hospital, which, you know, is wonderful when you're trying to manage little healthcare dollars and deliver, you know, good care to people. And I think what's important is because the scientific community does realize that the problem with the embryonic stem cells will be the rejection issue. I think quickly, perhaps under the new administration, pretty soon we'll see the debate shift to the human cloning debate. Because if they can clone you, you won't reject you. And so they'll make a little embryo clone of you, and then they'll destroy the embryo to have the stem cells from the embryo that's been cloned from you.
Well, because I think a lot of this is simply, doing things that really I don't think God is ever going to approve of. The things we're doing, some of the things the scientists are doing, are just downright immoral.
Well, we are surrounded by that in our day-to-day lives. I've just written an article on the woman who just gave birth to the octuplets. And, you know, there's an ethical nightmare when you just look at all the different machinations of that one story of what doctors were doing or allowing to be done. It's a time where you look out the window and you think, has the world gone mad? And the mad scientists have run loose.
That's true. And, you know, she already has several, at least one or perhaps two of the original six children she had. You know, one of them is autistic. And, you know, and then I think there's a certain amount of disability in a couple of them.
But you see how quickly the IVF technology that allowed them to make the embryos in the lab to help the women have babies has now shifted over. We can make the embryos in the lab to help cure Michael J. Fox and Christopher Reeve. So it's a seamless thinking there that this human life, this tiny little embryonic human life, can be used instrumentally.
And of course, once we've acknowledged that, then of course, at what point do we worry about whether we snuff out human life or destroy human life? Because there really are people out there who hate human life. What most Americans don't know is that this whole concept of eugenics did not begin in Nazi Germany. It began here in the United States and was transferred to Nazi Germany. They just applied it much more efficiently and effectively than we did, although we had mass sterilization programs of the inferior people. You know, before the Nazis began, and they just picked up and ran with the ideas that were financed and created right here in the United States. And then, of course, after the war, they felt that eugenics was a bad term, so they shifted over to population control. But believe me, it's all part and parcel of the same thing. Well, you know, certainly as we look at this whole idea of using the embryonic stem cells, here in California, do you live in California, Jennifer?
I do.
And of course, you remember, of course, the campaign to get the proposition passed so that they would give $3 billion for embryonic stem cell research. Now, if it had any potential or even a possibility of benefit, it would have been funded by private industry to make money on it. But since there is no way that the private industry is going to work out it because it has all sorts of complications, then they got the people here in California with a carefully orchestrated massive campaign, and using Michael J. Fox and Christopher Reeves to play on the heartstrings of the people, thinking that somehow we were going to help them. Whereas, of course, the market had already determined embryonic stem cells were not effective because they got teratomas. You injected these in animals and sometimes in, well, I don't know that it ever injected them in people, although my understanding is they did this on several occasions. But what is a teratoma? Could you explain to our listeners what is a teratoma? Because this is what happens so often when you use these embryonic stem cells in animals.
Yes, and that has been the problem with the embryonic stem cells, that they do form these tumors, teratomas, these disorganized, very wild kind of tumors. Part of the beauty, they say, of the embryonic stem cell is that they can manipulate it to become whatever they want it to become. But the downside to that is it's chaotic and they can't control it. So it has been only successful in laboratory rats in producing these teratoma tumors, which is why we're watching very closely as Geron Corporation in Menlo Park, California, is going to now start injecting these into the first time ever human subjects, patients, to see if they will develop these tumors, which is very dicey. I mean, talk about closing down a market. If they are really anxious to spend the $3 billion that they got in California from Proposition 71, and the first human clinical trial goes down the tube because a patient dies or develops these tumors, maybe that's the way we should be praying, I suppose. I don't know. But it's really quite controversial because in the laboratory, these embryonic stem cells have pretty frequently, consistently produced teratomas.
Very fine. If you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Go right ahead, Jennifer, and certainly the teratoma is basically it's a tumor and it has all different things in it, all different parts of the living human being. It may have a tooth, it may have skin, it may have fat, it may have muscle, it can have literally any tissue in there. And of course, sometimes these become malignant, but they certainly are not beneficial. I mean, who would want to have a tumor with a couple of teeth and
sure.
They're gnashing back and forth? And I remember reading about these and even seeing them in when I was going to medical school.
And you saw that in the early days when they were doing the cloning of Dolly the sheep. In the cloning technology, in the cloning of human embryos right now, the same with Dolly the sheep. It's the first attempts, hundreds and hundreds of attempts, produced abnormal animals. And it wasn't until almost 300 attempts that they got Dolly, who we know ended up going on and dying as a much younger sheep than she should have been, and she was very sick. So the same applies in these embryonic stem cells, and the research is showing that the tumor formation has been very problematic. But they're again, when you look at the Geron clinical trials that they're getting ready to do, they're preying on the hopes and the fears of spinal cord injured patients who feel like they have nowhere else to go. There's no hope. They're at the end of their rope. And when you have a society, you mentioned eugenics in America, that has always been willing to categorize some people don't count, some people count more than other people count, some people can be used or eliminated. That's part of the whole philosophy.
Well, I think I'm very surprised that they are going to let them experiment on humans when they haven't ever been able to, in my knowledge, actually to show any benefit in animals. Now, certainly the animals that have had adult stem cell transplants, we've seen pictures of those little mice with a transected spinal cord, instead of being able to move around and move their lower extremities after the transplant. Of course, fortunate for the mouse, but they're fairly small so that the nerves don't have to grow a long distance, and the nerves grow about an inch a month. So if you've got a high spinal cord injury, it would take many years before, of course, you could even hope to begin to get any return of function, and of course it would be incomplete. But certainly if you're quadriplegic, anything at all would be beneficial.
Yeah, I know. And there's so many other diseases that are, you know, really, as we mentioned earlier, with adult stem cells, there is promise and there is hope for treatments. So I wouldn't say cures at this point, but definitely treatments. And specifically, I'd love to highlight MS. There's a doctor at Northwestern outside of Chicago, Dr. Burt, who's just doing phenomenal work using the patient's own stem cells with multiple sclerosis and treating them. And they're just yesterday I heard of this young, early 20s African-American boy who was diagnosed with MS. And 3 years ago, he was basically looking, you know, at spending his life in a wheelchair. And Dr. Burt has treated him, and he is symptom-free, and he has been, you know, symptom-free for years now. And it's just a wonderful story. And I would just say anybody who's listening that knows anybody who has MS should be, you know, telling them to contact Dr. Burt.
All right. And where is he? What's his school again?
He's at Northwestern University.
Right.
In Illinois.
All right, fine, right? I was even accepted back in Northwestern when I was applying for medical school, but I went to the University of California. Hang on there. We'll be right back with... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we are going to go to Nick, who's calling us from Costa Rica, but right now our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And hi, Nick, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing okay. Today I happened to go to my doctor here in Costa Rica, and he told me about another doctor that we have that I've been to for chelation. And he's a surgeon, and he has arranged for a panel to start stem cell research here. And I understand that they already tried it on one person with MS, and they actually got up and walked out of their wheelchair.
Well, basically, of course, Jennifer was just saying there's a Dr. Birch at Northwestern University who's been treating multiple sclerosis with this, and he's had some miraculous treatments. Now, is he on a clinical trial at the present time, Jennifer?
He's in a clinical trial. Yes,
right.
He is.
And so basically we'll have to wait until, you know, because sometimes you have to realize, Nick, with any these diseases, specifically with MS, sometimes they get worse and sometimes they get better. Usually the course is one of progressive degeneration and progressive incapacity. So you're going to have it. You can't base everything on one case, but there have been a few cases out that are certainly encouraging, and you have to sometimes even have a double-blind study. But I think the potential for this really is amazing, and that's really what's so exciting about it. And so
yeah,
I'm glad that they're going to be doing something down there. Perhaps they can even do some studies. But Dr. Birch at Northwestern University apparently is...
Yes, how do you spell his last name, please?
How do you spell his last name?
It's B-U-R-T.
B-U-R-T,
Dr. Birch.
Right.
Okay, B as in boy.
Right, and so you can probably look him up on the Internet. What I'd do would be Google it, stem cell research, MS, the Northwestern University, and I bet you can pick him up. You listen to us on shortwave or the Internet?
Internet.
Okay, fine. Well, the Internet truly is miraculous. Let's hope we can keep it for a while.
Yes, I need to mention one more thing.
Right.
I don't know if you have ever interviewed Christian Wild. He has a book called Miracle Stem Cell Hack Repair, and George Nuri has interviewed him several times.
All right, fine.
An excellent book. Has a lot of referrals. Would be a good person for you to interview.
All right, fine. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Nick, anything else you want to say?
I had bypass surgery about 5 years ago, so I'm hoping this will help me.
Okay, fine. Well,
plugging up again.
All right, fine. Well, I think that certainly there have been some cases where they've used the stem cells, for cardiac damage, and there's been miraculous recovery. Anyway, we just got to have to wait to see.
Please get this book. You can get it off Amazon. Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair, and his latest book is Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair and Turmeric. And this is non-embryonic.
All right, fine. Thank you very much. Okay,
all
fine.
Right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, Chris, that's Nick calling us from Costa Rica. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464 if you'd like, of course, to talk to Jennifer, who's really on the front lines of this battle. What about the possibility of treating juvenile diabetes? Now, for our listeners out there, I said in the adult person with adult onset diabetes, they call it type 2, these people really don't have a shortage of insulin. They have a resistance to insulin. But certainly the juvenile diabetes type 1, why they do have a shortage of insulin because their islands of Langerhans are located in the pancreas are not working well. What about that? Potential treatment for type 1 diabetes.
Yes, there's a gentleman who's down in Florida who's doing clinical trials using, again, umbilical cord blood stem cells treating patients with type 1 diabetes. So, again, demonstrating that this research is moving forward. It's not unethical. It's using the wonderful stem cells that are in the cord blood after the baby's born. And using those to treat either the baby that's born with type 1 diabetes, they can be used to treat that baby, or perhaps a family member if there's a good match that has the diabetes. But again, in the embryonic stem cells, nothing.
As long as it's coming from another
person. We keep the scorecard going all the time. I think there's about 75 different diseases now that have successes with the adult and zero embryo.
And yet, of course, we hear this debate over and over again. Of course, Barack Obama has reversed the executive order that George Bush had put out, about the use of embryonic stem cells. Ladies and gentlemen, it's all showbiz. It's all to distract your attention and getting you arguing over the wrong issues. Once you begin to understand that and you begin to see how they are molding our minds and creating our tastes and forming our ideas, once we understand we're being manipulated by the medium, why, of course, then we can begin to think independently. It's a wonderful thing, really. Well, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and I hope you too one day can find yourself free of the control exerted by the medium over the minds of the American people. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Jennifer Lawl. And Jennifer, is there a lot of interest out there across America on this subject? I mean, do a lot of speaking on it, what's the current status? Do you think the average individual has any idea what we're even talking about?
Yeah, well, you ask a lot of questions. Yes, I do a lot of speaking and writing on this. I don't sadly think that the American public is by and large educated and properly informed, nor are they even aware. That's part of the problem when you live in a 24/7 news cycle culture where people are constantly being bombarded by information. They get information overload, and then they oftentimes just sort of check out because it becomes too much to try to keep tabs on. I do get a lot of calls, though, from patients who are looking for, where to turn to for a therapy. So, and that's often the case. We don't go to the doctor until we're sick. We don't try to get educated and informed on something until we're faced with a crisis where we need to all of a sudden get more information about a situation we find ourselves in. So I'm trying to always remind people to be more proactive, especially because we have to go to the voting booth a lot on these issues. And we want informed voters. And we saw what happened in Prop 71 in California, where I have met many people who would identify themselves as people of faith, who would identify themselves as pro-life, but they voted for Proposition 71, which destroys embryos, because they didn't understand. They saw cures, and they thought, well, I'm for cures. I want to make sure that Michael J. Fox and sick people get a cure. So we have to be better citizens and better informed when we go to the voting booth.
Well, that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day and hope at least it has some effect. And I appreciate so much your willingness to come on to all of our various networks as we've been trying to get people to understand that they're debating the wrong issue and they're doing it not by accident but by intent and playing on our emotions. But then it's amazing, of course, they can make us believe that black is white, white is black, good is evil, evil is good. And our job is to try to get people to be able to think things through, see the world as it really is, and then, of course, hopefully they'll begin to become more effective and help us educate others, because unfortunately at the present time we have to rely upon people, educating people, educating people. Well, our guest, of course, is Jennifer Lawl. We're going to be back here in just a moment, and as we explore this whole issue of adult stem cells, embryonic stem cells. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jennifer Lawl. And before, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is simply another example of how they manipulate our reality, get us arguing over the wrong issues, and of course conceal so much of the truth from the American people. I think they take great delight in getting us confused and arguing over issues that are really unimportant. Now, before we go on, of course, if you have a call, you'd like to talk to Jennifer, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But Jennifer, what about your website? Do you have a website? What will people find on it? And how can they get to it?
Yes, our website is CBC, that's C as in Charlie, B as in baby, C as in Charlie, -network.org. And they will find a wealth of information on these issues. And they will be able to sign up to receive our weekly email newsletter where we write on timely topics that are in the news, new breakthroughs, new advances that we are excited about that we want people to know about. I'll be writing next week about a new report that's just out on a clinical trial using adult stem cells to treat patients that have had heart attacks that has just cleared phase two of the clinical trial, which was a two-year study of using this adult stem cell treatment on patients with heart attack. And it has passed that clinical trial with flying colors, so it's moving on to phase three. And by phase four, it becomes just a general, a normal therapy then. So good news like that. So I would encourage all your listeners to go on our website, visit our website, get on our mailing list, and we will keep them informed on these matters.
All right, fine. So I think it's important that the average individual knows what's going on. You're going to have to learn. You're going to have to take care of yourself. Unfortunately, there is so much disinformation out there in the medical profession. I go to the meetings every week, and, you know, they're still talking about the things they were talking about 50 years ago, but so many of these exciting things that we're not hearing about, certainly, and so much of the information that they put out at the meetings, in my estimation, it just is not accurate. And so you're going to have to learn. You're going to have to hopefully try to educate your doctor on these things, the exciting things that are coming down the line as far as stem cell research and certainly other things that we've learned as far as various things that will help you to live longer and maintain your health. Well, what is happening within the bioethics field as far as this is concerned? Because I know that was your first love.
I mean, as it relates to the stem cells.
As it relates to the stem cells.
Yes, well, we are preparing for a change in policy at the federal level with the shift in the administration from President Bush to President Obama. President Obama has made it very clear that he will be rescinding the existing Bush policies, which did not allow for the federal funding to advance on embryonic stem cell research. So we know that that will be changing. And we know that our country is financially not doing well at all, so we will be, again, raising the unethical nature, the fact that we have wonderful progress in adult stem cells, and that we don't have additional money to pump into an area of research that has so far not provided any promise and is ethically problematic. We have our work cut out for us.
Well, now what's happening here in California with that $3 billion the good people of California put out because they wanted to help Christopher Reeves and Michael J. Fox?
Yes, they have given out quite a bit. I want to say close to $650 million of that $3 billion have been given out. And they are actively doing human cloning and embryonic stem cell research in the state of California, which Californians are funding. And again, we know that the state of California is not doing well financially either. So you would certainly think that you could find people who maybe don't agree with you on the life issue, that it would agree with you at least on the fiscal discipline issue, that should we be funding speculative research when the state is in such dire need of cash.
Well, if it's the people who voted for it, I'm sure that somebody's going to get awfully rich over this, and they're the people who are pushing this. Why? I don't think they really cared about Michael Fox and Christopher Reeves. I think they wanted the money, and they've got oodles of it. I mean, $650 million here and $650 million there when you got $3 billion to waste. And of course, I'll never forget how they sold that legislation, that initiative, the people. They said, it is not going to raise your taxes. This is a bond issue. It's not going to raise your taxes. And nobody ever asked, well, if he's not going to raise our taxes, where's the money coming from to pay the bonds? And of course, what happened, I mean, when Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor, the state budget was about $95 billion, and I don't know what position he took on the embryonic stem cell initiative, but he was backing all the other ones. And suddenly we went from, I mean, we're talking about 5 years ago, from a budget of $94 or $95 billion up to $140 billion a year, and a lot of that was paying the interest on the bonds, and they the principal on the bonds too. At least you got to pay the interest on the bonds, and then down the line you got to pay the principal back, and nobody ever asked, gee, how can you be borrowing all this money and you never have to pay it back? Somebody's going to have to pay it. It's amazing how gullible people are, isn't it?
Yeah, they were pretty snookered, weren't they? And the sad thing is when you look back at the Proposition 71 amendment, I believe that the language of the bill was about 10,000 words. And when you have, a regular, general election with several other amendments and propositions and the local stuff and the state stuff, to commit to reading 10,000 words on one bill when the headline is Cures for California, a lot of people just don't read much farther past the big headline that we're going to cure every disease known to humankind.
I hope people begin to realize that it is important to vote, but you have to know what you're voting on, what the issues are. And, of course, this was designed to deceive the people, and, boy, it sure did a pretty good job.
And there's so many people that I meet now, because since the passage of Proposition 71, I've traveled and spoken and written, and there's so many people that say, oh, if I could only have my vote back, now that I understand what I voted for, I would never have done that, which is just unfortunate that we're in that kind of a position, and we don't want to set people up where the only cures we have to offer them have been developed on the backs of tiny little embryos that had to be destroyed. We've seen that debate play out in just the vaccination and immunization, where moms and dads of good conscience don't want to take immunizations that were developed at the cost of embryos being destroyed or babies being aborted. And we don't want to set up another backlash where we develop cures from embryonic stem cells that people will feel morally obligated to refuse.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how the system plays out. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, Jennifer is the resident expert on this here in California, and I think it's a vitally important issue for many reasons. The moral issue certainly is important. The manipulative issue is very, very important, and then the scientific possibilities of what could be accomplished with this, is really, really phenomenal. And is this a research, a human research being funded out of that Prop 71 funding?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. About half of the $600 million that's already been spent, about half of it has gone to just building the labs, but then the other half has been doled out to grants to actually doing the research.
Well, who ends up with the labs after they build them, are they going to give those back to the state or somebody? My whole feeling about this was a boondoggle. Somebody was going to make a lot of money off the stupid voters in California.
Right.
And they did make a lot of money, and the media never told the people the truth. But then why would we expect them to?
You're right. And most people, if you ask them today about Proposition 71, they wouldn't even remember it. So people have gone on with their merry lives, as we all do after the elections come and go. And they're not sitting around being the watchdog saying, what has happened to our taxpayer money? Are you using it wisely? Who's going to own those buildings? Who's going to profit? Who's going to get their pockets lined on this?
And I think that's really what it's all about. They talk about their compassion, their concern for Christopher Reeves, their concern for Michael J. Fox, and it's really all about, money.
Yeah.
And they really raped and pillaged the population of California with that one. Well, you know, Sydney, I think it's important people understand the wonderful potential for this. And, you know, does this have any place at all in healing of bones? You've mentioned the heart, you've mentioned the neurological, we mentioned the diabetes. Are there any other specific things, functions where this will really help?
Well, definitely bones, definitely in skin. I think once on your show I mentioned one area of research is on just getting wounds to heal. And, you know, with your medical background and with my nursing background, you know how difficult it can be once a patient gets a really bad wound, especially if they're diabetic or their nutritional state is compromised. So that's been a wonderful advance to be able to see people that have gangrenous, you know, wounds, to be able to heal and regenerate nice, good, healthy tissue. So it's just an exciting field when you just, again, when I said the scorecard is some 70-plus diseases are now being treated using various forms of adult stem cells, either from cord blood or, you mentioned, even fat. We have such an obesity problem in America. I think if just the general public knew that they could collect stem cells from fat, lots of people would willingly just volunteer to donate their fat.
Right, but of course, don't they usually try to use the same person's fat rather than somebody else's fat?
Well, they do, but, you know, for the point of the research moving forward, if they just, because right now a lot of this is just at the research clinical trial stages, and it isn't necessarily translated over to the treatment side yet.
Well, my understanding is that actually they have a means, even in the laboratory, of taking these stem cells and then directing the direction they're going to go. Are they going to go into a neurological tissue for the spinal cord?
Yes.
Are they going to go into heart muscle?
Yeah.
Or is it going to go into skin? I mean, apparently, somewhere or other, they're able to adjust these stem cells to get them to grow into specific, in other words, not just a general stem cell, but one that will develop these specific tissues.
And that was the wonderful breakthrough of last year with the Japanese researcher, Yamanaka. And he was able to take a skin cell, and by switching off one of the genes, was able to make those embryonic-like stem cells where he could, you know, mold and manipulate them to become bone or direct them to become neuro stem cells or whatnot. So that's just another fascinating advance. The more they're able to understand the stem cells and to be able to, you know, take them back almost, if you will, to that state where they were when they were in an embryonic state. So again, it's able to accomplish what they want without the ethical problem of destroying the embryo. And if you can do that skin cell manipulation with the patient's own skin cell, again, it's the beauty of the patient's own body repairs their own body.
And of course, really, you almost see the hand of the creator, the designer, in all of this.
Absolutely.
There is this potential for growth in one stem cell. One stem cell that's actually obtained from the skin has the potential to grow into a whole flock of stem cells that can cure degenerative diseases, can cure heart disease. The potential really is unparalleled. And yet, of course, what they're doing is they've got us all focused on embryonic stem cells or non-embryonic stem cells, and they're not telling the American people the truth about the wonderful potential that's out there. And, of course, the hand of the designer is in all of this, and all the doctors are doing, the scientists are doing, is trying to understand the secrets of intelligent design and then utilize that to help people and to cure their terrible diseases.
And I think when you look at, you know, they argue that they want the embryonic stem cells because they can do anything. They can be all things to all men at all times. But they haven't been able to harness them and control them, which is why they get the tumors. And I think what's happening is because that little stem cell has been given its marching orders by the designer early on, that it's not going to be able to be molded to be whatever the researcher wants it to be, because it's already been designed for a purpose, and it's going to be bone, or it's going to be neuro, or it's going to be blood or heart. So it's fascinating to see that. And I don't think that God wants us to cannibalize the weakest and the smallest of our human family for our own gain.
Well, I think, of course, what we tend to lose sight of is that each individual, each fertilized egg, is once it's fertilized and is capable of growing, it will grow to be a human being. It'll live 67 years, and if you don't kill it, and of course, what they want to do is trivialize life and get us to go along with the fact that human life is not important. It's really already a spiritual battle. It's part of this whole effort to get us to turn our back on God's law and God's influence in our lives. Well, we've got Gary calling from Carmel. Hi, Gary. Do you have a question or comment?
I have a question for your guest.
All right.
And yourself. And that's, what do you think is the goal of the deceit? You know, because it's obvious that there's a goal to deceive, or do you think that it's just to deceive, to get government funding and pad pockets.
All right, fine. Jennifer, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think I don't know that there's one particular goal. I honestly believe that there are scientists who think that this is ethical because they don't share our view of the nature of human life. And they are just curious, inquisitive scientists who want to find a cure. I think there is a lot of hubris and a lot of arrogance. So some scientists are just thinking that they can play God, that they know what's best and what's right. I do think that there's greed, so that some of the goal is, you know, I can own the patent on this, because there's a lot of patenting that's driving this agenda too. So I can get rich, because if I can develop a cure or a particular technique in my laboratory that I can then patent, anybody who wants to do research on a particular disease has to pay me for the information that I have discovered. So, and then there's just a rebellious spirit against wanting to be regulated, wanting to be told that there's a moral code that has to be adhered to.
And I think
right, the driving away from absolutes. So.
And I think there are some people who hate God too, Gary. I don't know. I don't think we cannot tell what any one specific purpose is. I think everything Jennifer said is true. But some people hate God. We'll be back in just a moment. Gary, did you have anything else you wanted to say? No, I guess we lost Gary from Carmel, but I think it's a legitimate question, and I think your answer was very, very well thought out. And I think that we cannot tell you what any one person's view is on this, is why Barack Obama wants to allow this sort of thing. Maybe he doesn't understand what this is all about, but because I have this uneasy feeling that we're constantly being manipulated, and they want to focus our attention on specific issues to draw our attention away from others. How much of that plays out here, I don't know, but I see this in so many of the issues going on today, whether it be the abortion issue, the homosexuality issue, certainly the issue on marriage and whether marriage is important, and this poor woman with her 14 children now and no husband. And anyway, it is, but we focus our attention on that, and terrible things are going on throughout the world, and we never hear about them. Well, you've got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program for us today, Jennifer.
I guess I want to say one final thing about on the horizon, because once President Obama changes the rules, we have about 500,000 embryos frozen in America that he's going to permit federal funding, and that will be if the parents who created those embryos let them be used for research. It'll be interesting to see, because I think very soon the scientists will be saying either those embryos aren't enough or they're not good enough. And they will move quickly to be able to, for the first time, fund the creation of embryos for the sole purpose of destruction. Right now these are embryos that were created to make babies that aren't going to be used anymore, is the argument. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly the scientific community, who seems to be unable to be satisfied, will say, they're not enough, we need more. And that will be a real shift again, a seismic shift in the debate.
But it all gets back to that old issue. Is there really a God? Is human life important? Is every person made in the image and likeness of God? Is every person unique according to God's plan for their lives? Or is this simply all a myth? Well, Chris, you and I would accept that this is true. And this is really the heart of the debate. I think that there are people who are just in revolt against God, who hate God. And then, of course, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who never even thought of it, but I know that there are some people who suddenly are consumed with this anger, hostility, call it what you will, but they're going to answer to God, not to me. Anyway, they're fortunate. Anyway, God bless you, Jennifer. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a fascinating opportunity to talk to you about this very real and very important issue today.
Thank you for having me on.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And this is Dr. Stan. We do hope that you've enjoyed our talk with Jennifer. I think it's an important issue, but as with so many issues, it is all clouded in emotion, and they want to get us there, they want to get us arguing, and they want to get our attention off what the real issue is. And that is, there is a God that created mankind, and we are to be subservient to Him. And freedom is not the ability to do whatever we want to do. It's the ability to do what we should do, according to God's laws. Well, certainly, if you believe that Radio Liberty has an important message, and that we are truly involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, we do hope that some of you will consider seriously joining the Radio Liberty family and help us so we can maintain the network that we have and perhaps even expand it. We'd love to do that, but we're going to just wait and see what happens. But right now, at least, we're holding our own, and I'm just so grateful for that. And difficult times like this, because some of our listeners who've been long-time supporters are in difficult times now, and we understand that, and they're just incapable of continuing their support. So if you can help us, love to hear from you. We hope many of you out there will want to get certainly our new book we're carrying called Target Patton. It's the story of the murder of General Patton, and we shouldn't be surprised about that. I mean, they left the boys at Pearl Harbor to be slaughtered. I believe they left the people in the Twin Tower to be slaughtered, and they intended to kill a lot more of them. And the people in the South Tower kept being told, stay at your seat, stay at your seat, don't get up, don't worry about the attack on the North Tower, you're perfectly safe. And, of course, the fellow who was in charge of Morgan Stanley ran up and down the aisles with a megaphone saying, get out. And 2,400 people who would have died if the people there who were in charge had had their way, 2,400 people survived. And, of course, we lost less than 3,000 as a result of that. But remember, right after the attack, they kept telling it was a 6,000. They had them all counted. They knew how many they were going to kill. There was going to be twice as many as at Pearl Harbor. But they were unsuccessful, and thank goodness to this very courageous fellow who actually went back into the building, and he perished. Well, of course, if you haven't yet heard our story of the USS Liberty, the American ship, the intelligence gathering ship that was sent off the coast of the Sinai in the 1967 war, and it was sent there to be destroyed, and the people at the highest levels of our government, Robert McNamara, member of the Trilateral Commission, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the evilest people I know of, the man, of course, who's deeply involved in the occult, at least according to the article in West magazine that described how Henry Kissinger and Robert McNamara, good friends, would go off to the occult center in Colorado where the Satanists and the others meet. Robert McNamara was ordering, of course, there would be no effort to save the men on that ship, on the Liberty, when it came into attack. We have a 4-tape set, we have a DVD, we have a video, they're different, and then we put together a little syllabus, and we think it's important information. It's called the Radio Liberty Special. You can get them separately, get them together. But people have to understand that there really is evil in the world. If you want to know about how they killed Martin Luther King, we have a 4-tape set and on the murder of Martin Luther King as part of a CIA hit because he was becoming embarrassing for the government. He had a large following, and so they had him killed. And then, of course, the book written by the lawyer who was employed by the Martin Luther King's family, William Pepper. The book is entitled Our Act of State. You need to get the information. It's available by calling Radio Liberty. at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And this little clique is still in control. I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read my book, shame on you. You need to get it and read it. Or if you can't afford it, go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com and just go down to our video section and you can watch the talk from which the book came there completely free. We give you our permission to copy anything we produced. And just get the information out and help us inform the American people about this effort to destroy America and everything good and noble and worthwhile in the world. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our radio programs 9 hours a day. And then please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection.